Mile Higher is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Having MG can make cooking difficult, but over the years, I've found some really helpful tools and tips that I'm excited to share. Hi, I'm Alicia. I think cooking should always be fun, creative, and of course, delicious. These black bean burgers are hearty, full of flavor, and MG friendly. You're gonna love them.
Check out Alicia's Black Bean Burger cooking video and other recipes full of tips and tricks for managing common MG symptoms while cooking only at mg-united.com.
Ready? Let's cook.
Hello, friends. Before we get into the episode, I wanted to let you know that we have a new merch collection out. We haven't come out with merch in a couple of months, so we have a really cute spring collection. All of the shows have new designs, which I'm very excited about. We've got t-shirts, we've got hats, we've got totes, we've got tumblers, we've got tank tops, we've got baby tees, we've got cropped tank tops, we've got it all. So there's definitely something for everyone over at milehighermerch.com. Also, just a reminder that 100% of the proceeds from any merch, from any show, goes directly to the Higher Hope Foundation to help support victims of violent crimes, as well as other nonprofits who are in the same scope of work. So get yourself some cute merch for the springtime and also, you know, help out a great cause as well. So yeah, happy shopping.
Hey, what is up, everybody, and welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast. It is me, Josh, joined here by the wonderful and amazing Ian.
Oh, hey, thank you. Those are some nice superlatives. Those are very kind.
You're welcome. And the beautiful and brilliant Janelle.
Whoa. Oh, okay, like Josh, thank you. You're the joyous and what's another J adjective?
Yeah, joyous.
Joyous and
jolly.
Jolly. Josh.
Thank you. I wish I felt that way. But yeah, we're doing good. We're here another week without our my second half, my other half.
Our kind and
caring.
Caring with a K.
Kendall Ray. She's still away taking care of our beautiful boy, enjoying her time away from work. And just living her best mom life. But she misses all of you, and she'll actually be back before you know it. She's kind of down to the last, I think, 4 to 6 weeks left, I think, of her leave, and then she'll be back. I know many of you miss her, as we do. So she'll be back soon, but for now, you got the trio. And we've got a very interesting episode for you today, something a little less dark than usual. But still very interesting.
Very. I mean, I was going to ask if, this is not quite so much a vanishing town, but when was the last time you guys visited a ghost town?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think it's been a long time, to be honest with you. I in my childhood, my dad took me to a bunch of ghost towns because my dad was obsessed with like the gold mining history of Colorado. And because that's what, here in Colorado, most of our ghost towns are mining towns. And so he, for a long time, we would like trek up to all the various mining towns, which are really cool.
They're awesome.
Like, so, like, usually they're in beautiful, beautiful places in the mountains. And I don't think I appreciated it at the time at all. I was like, why the hell are we here? There's nothing here.
We drove 3 hours.
Yeah. We just went on that bumpy ass road to come look at some broken, dilapidated buildings.
And there's no stores.
There's nothing there. Yeah. And like, cool, dad. And then he'd be like, no, there's so much history here. There's so much going on here. So we've got some, but we're going to be talking about a bunch of different places that have essentially been wiped from the map, and maybe some places that people thought were real that actually were not real, that people swear by on the internet. They're like, no, I for sure remember this place. And then to find out this place was completely made up, but a lot of people actually believe that place existed.
Right. I mean, I told you, and I'll bring it up later, but both of my parents could have sworn that one of the places we'll be talking about today was real, and they heard about it in their childhood.
Yeah. So what's up with that?
What the fuck is up with that?
Well, that's what we'll be looking at. And then, of course, you know, by one of the most famous places that mysteriously vanished, Roanoke Colony. You know, people have been asking us to talk about that for years. And so finally, we're going to be talking about that, of course, because that's kind of the OG.
Absolutely.
Place that vanished without a trace, and everybody that lived in it. Poof.
I'm going down in July. John and I are going to take a road trip down to Southern Colorado, and we're going to go to like the Durango area. And I'm hoping that we'll come across some cool ghost towns, because that whole area, like the Silverton, Durango, Buena Vista area, is very known for a lot of the ghost towns. So hopefully we'll come across some. I'm excited.
Hopefully you have a paranormal encounter.
That'd be...
whether it be a UFO or a demon or...
Yeah. See, unlike you, Josh, I'm not willing to meet a demon.
Yeah, I would not like to meet a demon.
But a UFO, I would love that. I would love to have a paranormal encounter with a UFO. That would be great. Demons.
Pazuzu, no.
Yeah, no. I'm so good on that.
Well, I'm sure he'll have fun either way, whether it's one or the other. You'll have a story to tell.
Yeah. Okay.
Because in a lot of these places that have vanished, of course, there's legends and stories that followed. There's, you know, there's a place called Helltown, Ohio, which we'll be talking about. And there's lots of wild rumors that have swirled and stories about satanic cults and paranormal activity and all sorts of weirdness and strangeness going on. So very, very interesting. And of course, Roanoke Colony, you know, we got to start there because that's really, you know, kind of where it all begins.
Right.
But, you know, like we're saying, the American landscape, and really, I mean, you could go to any country across the world, and I'm sure there's plenty of places, much like the ones we'll cover today, that exist where, you know, people came there, they settled there, they created some type of town, and then all of a sudden, they were gone. Everybody just, you know, they built all of this infrastructure and then seemingly just left.
Poof.
And, you know, could have been because of a booming economy that once existed there and then they all left, or it could be for other reasons.
Right.
In Colorado alone, we have over 1,500 ghost towns, believe it or not, with structures still remaining at over 700 locations. And of course, for the classic American ghost town, the story is much the same. The boom economy, it leads to the creations of dozens of little towns, and then the economy dries out. Or the resource, gold, for example, you know, gold's pretty hard to get.
And it's hard to make.
It's very hard. And it's pretty rough conditions pulling it out of the ground as well.
Hey, remember when we did our tour?
Yes.
Of course. Mine? Was that 2 years ago, whatever, year and a half ago? Yeah, we did the company on our retreat. We did a tour of the, which mine was it?
I can't remember. It was, what was the town? It was right next to Idaho Springs.
Idaho Springs, yeah. Let me look it up in case for some reason anyone's looking to go.
Yeah, Idaho Springs, founded because of the mining that went on there. And a lot of towns up and down I-70 in Colorado.
I mean, even Golden, my hometown, you know, that was the town. Not really for mining. That's more where they bought the supplies. But
and
still,
beer.
And beer. Yeah. Coors.
It was the Phoenix gold mine that we went to in, Idaho Springs. Highly recommend if you're ever in the area. Really, really cool. They take you in. You get to go pretty deep in and learn about the history and like how, you know, they extracted all the precious metals. And I thought it was really cool.
I loved it. And I love the part where he turned off all the lights.
Yes.
That was awesome.
And holy shit.
That was dark.
It is dark. And then I'm like, they're like, yeah. And try doing this with candlelight. I'm like, oh, right. There wasn't spotlights.
Shit was tough, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to wrap your head around the conditions, especially back in like the 1800s. Like, what on earth?
I know.
The bravery you had to have to go into a coal mine. Or
the desperation.
Coal mine, gold mine, you name it. Yeah, the desperation too. Yeah. You moved yourself all the way across the country for hopes of striking it rich.
And now you're in a pit.
and then you're in a pit and it collapses on you. Or you're blowing holes into the walls with dynamite and, you know, all sorts of crazy accidents happen. Lots of people died. And so hence the name ghost towns, right? You know, all of the things that happen. I mean, just the 1800s in general and just how lawless it was.
It was a different world. It was a different, was like,
oh, I don't like you. Boom.
Dead.
You know?
Frontier justice.
Yep. And so, you know, they would stick around for a while. And then, you know, when things kind of dried up, they would just all of a sudden vanish. And, you know, that's not the story for every single ghost town, because one of the earliest settlements, Roanoke Colony, this place was abandoned without a trace of the settlers. And this is really like one of the first great American mysteries.
Absolutely.
And I mean, this one, it's pretty interesting. But also there's ghost towns like Centralia, Pennsylvania, which an underground fire was unleashed on the town following an accident. That same fire has raged for over 60 years and not a soul remains to feel the heat from it. So another very mysterious place. Meanwhile, in Boston, Ohio, the heat comes from a potential portal to hell, which the town left overnight to avoid the fate of Satanists, serial killers, and all kinds of paranormal activity. And a surprising number of towns like Dublin, Wisconsin, and Urkhammer, Iowa, may have never existed at all, with no records or traces, despite local legend and people saying they knew a relative who once lived there. So what were these places? Could they have been used for military testing, and maybe their histories were just sort of wiped from the archives from all, you know, stored information?
Right, gone to protect whatever strangeness was happening here.
Very, very possible, right? So let's get into it, starting off with the Roanoke Colony. Now, Roanoke is a small barrier island off the coastal tip of North Carolina. It's only about 8 miles long, and the island was quite fertile. It had been previously settled by both the Roanoke Native Americans and the Croatan tribe. Now, while the Spanish, you know, they were doing their thing, and it wasn't nice at all. They were plundering further south for a few decades. England had established only modest colonies in the New World, and it had set its sights on the East Coast to expand its ever-expanding presence. Sir Walter Raleigh, who himself never set foot on the New World, had organized two trips to attempt to settle the island of Roanoke for the crown. A 1585 trip seemed positive as military forces attempted to build a fort on the island, and two Native Americans from the region, Juan Cheese and Monteo, traveled to England to meet with Queen Elizabeth. However, while they attempted to establish some friendly relations with the English, the colonists on Roanoke led a warpath against the natives. In a matter of months, the bloodthirsty colonists were surrounded by Native Americans and said, "We're getting out of here." And they jumped on board the ship of Sir Francis Drake, who just happened to be passing by.
Which apparently it's like a very funny story, because like deadass, he was just passing by. He was doing his own travels. Okay. They were like, "Wait, wait." And they swam to him. They tried to escape that way. And many of them did. But he was just kind of like, "What the fuck happened?
Get us off this island." Well, when the colonists returned to see if anyone remained, they found the fort that they had created completely empty. They had left 15 men to defend what they could, but when they returned, those 15 men were nowhere to be found. In 1587, Governor John White set sail with 97 men, 17 women, and 9 boys. John had wanted to establish a colony further north along the Chesapeake Bay, but he was overruled. They were going to Roanoke to see if any of those 50 men were still alive. So the White Party arrived to find lots of signs of violence, but the 15 men were gone, and the site appeared to be ransacked. All that remained of the 15 were some of their remains. So imagine coming back to that and be like, oh shit.
There was a massacre.
Yeah. Something went down. At this point, they attempted to patch up relations the best they could with the natives, but one of their men, George Howe, was killed by Native Americans only 9 days after making landfall, because they're fucking pissed. So,
right.
Why are
you guys back?
We just drove you guys out. Now you're back. Ian, what's the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning?
I am, you know, checking to see who texted me in the evening, any of my lady loves, and then I'm thinking, oh, I should check that bank account.
Yeah, that's immediately your first
thought. Oh, crap.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty, I'm pretty much in the same place. Check the text messages, see what I missed, and then I'm opening up that Rocket Money app. And it's usually on the toilet.
Oh, for sure.
In the bathroom, at least.
That's where the fear grips me the most. It's
yeah.
Like, oh, my God.
that's when life hits you smack dab in the face, mm-hmm. and you want to know, you want to make sure your money's still in your account. You want to make sure that, you know, that paycheck hit, that those bills got paid. And Rocket Money makes it simpler than ever to do so, because Rocket Money, it's the number one finance app. If you don't have it, I mean, we've been talking about it for years.
You know, I was actually very thankful to Rocket Money yesterday, because I got an email from Rocket Money saying, a large, strange transaction in your account for $400. It's like, what the heck? Agoda. Luckily, it was just the final bit of charging for my hotels in Japan. But the fact of the matter is, if I would, that wouldn't have even come across my radar if I didn't have Rocket Money. It's just some Japanese company could have sucked $400 out of me.
You would have never known.
I would have never known.
Because even, you know, some of the banks out there, they offer that service, but I feel like it really never works.
No.
It'll tell you when large payments are coming out of your account. It'll also tell you if your bills go up in cost, which is really nice. So it'll actually filter out and give you what your utilities bills are, you know, all of those expenses you have every month, and then notify you if it sees a larger than sort of the average utility bill come out. I had a leak at my house, and it turned out that it was one of my toilets that was just running.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, one of my toilets just constantly running. And so I got my water bill for that month, and it was sky high compared to the last month. And Rocket Money helped me catch that.
They were like, go look. The only thing they didn't do was hire a plumber.
Yes, that is the one thing I did have to do, is I had to find a plumber. But, you know, it's super nice to have that kind of visibility in your finances. It'll also organize your subscriptions, which, you know, we all have loads of them these days, all into one neat list for you. And then with a few taps, they'll even help you cancel those. Which, how nice is that?
It is extremely nice, because they really put in the most amount of effort, these subscription companies, to not tell you how to cancel this crap.
Yes, it's a lot of hoops to jump through.
A lot of hoops.
And Rocket Money, you just give them some account information, then they go do the rest. You just sit back, relax, and let them do all the hard work for you. It's a personal finance app that helps you find and cancel unwanted subscriptions and monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills. It can even help you lower your bills for you, which is great, so you can grow your savings. Let Rocket Money help you reach your financial goals faster. Join at rocketmoney.com/milehigher. That's rocketmoney.com/milehigher. rocketmoney.com/milehigher.
That's good.
Now, John appealed to Monteo, who lived with the Croatans on the nearby Hatteras Island. Monteo was the first Native American to be baptized as a Protestant and was sympathetic toward the English. However, his counterpart, Juan Cheese, had grown to hate the colonists as an invading force and may have even participated in the massacre that killed the 15 men left behind from the previous expedition. However, it seemed like this new Roanoke settlement was thriving, and John White created many landscape paintings of their new home, while his daughter Eleanor Dare gave birth to Virginia Dare, who's been called the first English child born in the New World, on August 18th, 1587. It seemed like so long ago.
I know, dude. I mean, again, it's
what, the 1500s?
1500s? The printing press is still new. This is so, so early.
I wish we could time travel and just sit in like an observation deck.
Well, because I would love to see the difference between Sir Walter Raleigh back in, you know, jolly good England, divvying out all these orders, as opposed to the colonists and their living conditions compared to the palaces and everything.
Right, right.
And even more so compared to the Native Americans, who are watching their shit just kind of get taken left and right.
Who have been living one with nature for, you know, many, many years before. And
right.
Here's these guys coming here. We're going to build a fort.
Yeah. Hey, you guys ever heard of a gun?
Yeah. And disease?
And yeah. So on August 27th, John left behind the settlement on what was supposed to be just a quick journey back to England for supplies. But his plans to return to the burgeoning colony were squashed when the war between Spain and England ramped up and the Atlantic was deemed too unsafe for travel. John was able to set sail again 3 years later and arrived at Roanoke on August 18th, 1590, his granddaughter's birthday. But what he found horrified him. The fort had been overgrown with grass and roots, weapons were strewn everywhere, and chests of personal belongings were left open in the sun, with books and family heirlooms decaying in the humid Carolinian weather. All of the 117 colonists John left behind had vanished like ghosts. But this wasn't like the massacre of the 15 men before. There were no remains, no signs of a struggle, and no one left to say what happened. They were just simply gone. Now, there was one sign John was looking for. He had given his colonists a special code. If there was danger, carve a cross onto a tree. However, when he, you know, was looking at all these trees, he didn't find a cross, only this enigmatic message, Croatoan. John believed that this meant his colonists had gone to live with the Croat and Native Americans on Hatteras Island. Unfortunately, John was never able to verify this. A coming storm forced him to return home to England, and he died 3 years later without ever returning to the lost colony. Now, there have been dozens of theories since then about what happened to the 117 colonists. You know, the first, probably the most popular for a while, was that they were murdered by Native Americans, murdered by the Spanish, abducted, and then murdered by aliens. It just kind of goes down the list. However, John's initial theory remained the most consistent, with explorers writing as early as 1709 documenting Croatan natives who claimed to have English ancestry. A gold signet ring found on Hatteras Island dates back to the 16th century and may have belonged to, you know, one of these English colonists. This, along with other artifacts found on both Hatteras and inland Native American sites, further support this assimilation theory. However, a curious ripple to the mystery is the Dare Stones, which were found in 1937 about 65 miles west of Roanoke. The first claimed that colonists moved further inland until a 1591 attack by Native Americans killed them, including Virginia Dare. The stone was allegedly inscribed by her mother, Eleanor, and intended as her final words. However, as dozens of other Dare stones were found in the region, they were kind of considered a hoax, though this first one may have had some truth to it. Now, it's important to note that this unproven massacre theory was used to justify horrific actions taken by the U.S. government against Native Americans. It was actually cited before the Trail of Tears, alongside another debunked theory that there was a previous group of people before the Native Americans in North America, making them non-Indigenous. While it may just seem like harmless speculation for this 500-year-old mystery, the scars of colonization reach to this very day. However, one of the most famous theories is that Virginia Dare still haunts the island, and a white doe represents her spirit. So, in this folktale, Wanchese planned to kill every member of the Roanoke colony after John left, but Monteo rescued them before the attack. The colonists then assimilated with the Hatteras tribe, and Virginia even planned to marry the chieftain's son, Okisco. However, an evil old witch doctor wanted Virginia for himself. When she rejected him, he turned her into a white doe. Okisco wished to use a magic pearl arrow to pierce her heart and turn her back into a human, but Wanchese's son wished for the glory of killing the enchanted deer himself, and, you know, armed with a silver arrow gifted to his father by Queen Elizabeth. As both the men had the doe in their sights, they struck her at the same time, transforming her back into Virginia, but killing her in that very instant. Okisco prayed for his lover to return, but that can only happen if she were once again turned into a white doe with soft eyes and a gentle heart. To this day, locals claim to see a white doe who still haunts the forests near Roanoke Island.
This is another place I want to go check out.
Roanoke?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Badly, badly.
Just go walk around and see. It is very strange that all of those people just vanished.
Gone.
They didn't find any remains or anything like that.
Right. Because, like, even in this previous story, like, you know, they'd find bones or something.
Yeah.
They'd find some sort of clue to lead to the habitation, but no, just poof.
It's just like, where they go? Which I get why people stretch as far as abducted by aliens.
Right.
I mean, they vanished with zero trace whatsoever. So much so that, I mean, that's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
To just go missing like that. So it really does make you wonder what happened to them.
And, you know, John White was only there for a few days upon his return. So maybe if he would have had more time, he could have figured out some clues. But I think it's like a perfect storm for this mystery. It's like he couldn't even go to nearby Hatteras Island to check this out. He was just like, well, shit, all my people are gone.
Yeah.
And that's it.
So he's like, yeah, yeah, not going to stick around here. Yeah, very interesting. I don't know what I think, honestly. It's... because, like, obviously, the most likely scenario, they were, you know, murdered.
They were murdered.
They were killed.
Right.
And
perfect.
Ooh, perfect vibe for this episode. Mm-hmm. We got a thunderstorm going on. You might hear a little crackling in the background. Perfect for spooky ghost town.
Spooky, yeah. Spooky.
Yeah, let us know. What is your leading theory out there on Roanoke Colony. What do you think happened to them? Did they, maybe their remains are just buried, you know, deep where they've never been.
You know, or it could just be as simple as they moved further inland, gone forever.
Yeah.
I do kind of like the assimilation theory just because it's hopeful.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it is very hopeful. But let's turn our gaze towards Centralia, Pennsylvania. Because disasters aren't just stuff of history, right? We may think that with our advanced technology, we'd be able to master any strange natural occurrence that comes our way. However, sometimes it's that same inclination that leads to disaster and the disappearance of an entire town. Because Centralia, Pennsylvania, it sits atop thousands of layers of coal deposits that have remained untouched for several millennia. Coal mines began popping up around 1856, and the town itself incorporated a decade later. And its early history was marked by disputes surrounding the poor treatment of workers, leading to outbursts of violence. And over the years, the bosses and town leadership's carelessness led to the practice of setting fire to the landfill's trash in an open mine pit.
Which, that's so fucking stupid.
Damn. Can only imagine how much trash in a mine pit.
You're just chucking it in there? That's barbaric.
The fumes. In 1962, with firefighters stationed nearby, officials set fire to the trash and watched it burn for 2 days. When it seemed like the fire was put out, they packed up and went about their business as usual. However, this time, for still an unknown reason, the fire had somehow gone underground and ignited the coal mines beneath the entire town. I wonder, they didn't think about this? Like,
they didn't even consider. I mean, to be like, fair, I guess I...
Coal combustible? Yeah. We are living on top of coal underneath our feet and carving holes into the ground.
Fire, bad.
Big, giant bonfire. Toxic chemicals. Sure.
Let's do it.
Well, once the blaze was noticed, numerous attempts were made to put out the fire, though nothing worked. And altogether, federal, state, and local governments spent over $3.3 million to extinguish the fire, but they were unable to put it out. Meanwhile, Centralia residents began reporting that their basements were extremely hot. They're like, we turned the heater off a long time ago, but it's still...
It's toasty down here.
It's an oven down here. In 1979, Mayor John Coddington lowered a thermometer into an underground fuel tank at one of his gas stations and found that the gasoline was a scalding 172 degrees Fahrenheit. Jesus.
It's fucked up.
That is so dangerous.
Yeah, oh the gasoline God. Is almost 200 Kaboom. Degrees.
Yeah.
I'm surprised this whole town just blow up.
I know.
Then on Valentine's Day in 1981, a 12-year-old boy fell into a 4-foot-wide sinkhole that had opened in his grandmother's backyard. Luckily, they were able to rescue him, and thanks to his 14-year-old cousin, before he fell into the raging coal fire. But a massive plume of carbon monoxide exploded out from the hole. Yeah, talk about carbon monoxide poison. Jesus.
Imagine you pull, you know, your cousin out of a hole in the ground, and then just a bunch of steam bursts out. You'd think you were living on top of hell. Like, yeah. This was divine retribution.
Yeah. Eventually, the federal government realized that the thin layer of topsoil was the only thing separating the town from a massive, undying fire that lay below. Congress allocated money to buy out the town's residents so that they could clear out before catastrophe struck, and almost the entire population of roughly 1,000 people accepted the offer. By 1990, 63 people stayed behind, and by 2021, only 5 homes were left standing. The true ghost town became a tourist attraction for those looking for the bizarre. The town's central road, once known as Graffiti Highway, was covered for miles with thousands of pieces of street art. And today, all of that's been paved over.
Which, that's too bad.
Yeah. You can't leave anything cool
alone. I know. I guess that is like, well, people are coming to this natural disaster site to go look at the Graffiti Highway, so maybe we shouldn't have that.
I think they're probably trying to just keep people...
Exactly.
Away, you know, they don't want people flocking there because of the liability. I mean, they paid everybody to leave. Everything in life is continuing to go more and more digital. You know, it's only a matter of time before... I mean, honestly, you really don't even need to carry around a wallet these days. It's kind of crazy.
That's what I was going to say is like, you know, if you're ever caught outside without your wallet, you might freak out. Then you're like, wait, I've got some apps that can help me.
Yeah, and you can have your ID on your phone now, which is super nice. And then with Cash App on your phone, now you have a way to pay your friends, pay vendors. And, you know, it's simple. It's easy. It's catchy. You know, you have a cool name on the Cash App. You're like, hey, my Cash App name is J Money.
That's a great name.
Hey, ya boy.
Ian Swag.
Yeah, Ian Swag. Cash App also just released a new status program for the way people actually spend called Cash App Green, which unlocks new ways for you to pay, get rewarded, and easily grow or manage your money on your terms. So now they're expanding their offerings into actually managing your money. Now, when you spend at least $500 a month with the Cash App card, so not only do they have the Cash App, but they have a card you can use as well, or Cash App Pay, you earn green status, which unlocks benefits like up to $200 of free overdraft coverage, higher borrow limits, and custom personalized cashback offers every Friday at places you love to shop.
That's like payday.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. I mean, there's no better way to spend your money. Spend it with Cash App. There's so many different ways you can do it, and you get all the benefits that they've got to offer. You can turn everyday spending into status with Cash App Green. Just download the Cash App today or visit cash.app/new to learn more about this and other great features launching now. For a limited time, new Cash App customers can earn $10 if they use code CASHAPP10 in their profile at sign up and send $5 to a friend within 14 days. Terms apply. Cash App is a financial services platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners, prepaid debit cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC, Cash App Green, overdraft coverage, borrow cash back, offers and promotions provided by Cash App, a Block, Inc. brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosures. This town was even the inspiration for the look of the 2008 film adaptation of Silent Hill. Though it was not the inspiration for the original Japanese games, if you ever played those Silent Hill games.
I love classics. The Silent Hill games.
It's important to note that geologists think the fire could keep burning for a couple of hundred years due to the amount of coal still in the ground. So it's just like a coal engine under there.
Yeah, yeah. They've got it. They've got it moving. It's basically a locomotive.
And it'll just keep burning till the coal runs out.
Right.
Damn.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I could be exposed for being very stupid, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Where's the oxygen? Don't they need oxygen for this fucking thing to burn?
That's a good point. I think it's just because they've drilled so many holes due to the mines.
So they're just, it's...
It's just...
There's enough oxygen to keep it.
Right.
Dang, that's crazy.
And then all these sinkholes keep popping up too. So there's even more holes down there.
Which doesn't surprise me because everything's...
Burning.
Yeah, everything's a zillion degrees. So, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, you don't want to go wandering around here, fall in a sinkhole.
That would be...
Sinkholes are scary, man.
Dude, horrifying.
The fact that the ground can just break open and suck you down into it.
It's like a top 10 fear, I think.
Oh, 100%. I always see them, like cars going into them. Or, like, just they're in the street.
People die every year from sinkholes. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. And you can't even, like...
There's no predicting.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, it's my time.
Now the earth's eating us again.
Florida, I think, is like notorious for sinkholes.
Really?
Well, the ground is just like so squishy in Florida.
Mm. Yeah.
Wet ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got to be careful where you build your house there. But if you were to visit Centralia today, you'd find miles of untouched flora and fauna that have taken over the previously paved over coal mining town. You know, nature takes back over any of these abandoned places. You know, that's like one of my favorite things about apocalyptic films and TV shows is I always love the shots of civilization overrun by flora and fauna
everywhere.
Yeah,
it's kind of beautiful.
And you're kind of like, wow. Like we recently watched all of the, you know, Planet of the Apes movies. A great example of like how beautiful
this
planet
could
look.
Wow, maybe we're the problem.
Yeah,
maybe,
right, right.
I mean, even Chernobyl, right? That's a nuclear disaster. Yeah. And yet Pripyat looks pretty gorgeous these days. And there's plenty of flora and fauna just kind of thriving.
Yeah, we really just destroyed the natural beauty of this place. And then we replace it with like landscaped lawns.
Data center.
Look how nice. Yeah. Look at that fountain in front of that data center.
Yeah. Oh, this is beautiful.
Those ducks playing. love the future. Looks bright. But anyways, the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary Church is one of the few remaining buildings standing, and it peaks over the tree line, gleaming in the sunlight. You know, it's kind of this like, oh.
I've seen some photos, and it literally looks like the story of like the city on the hill. Like, oh my God, look at this perfect place.
Heaven, hell.
Hell.
Yeah. If there's any place that exists in this physical reality. Look no further than Centralia, Pennsylvania. But let's talk about Helltown. I was excited to cover this because this crossed my radar, and I was potentially thinking about talking about it on Lights Out, but I was like, you know what? Let's do this on Mile Higher.
Let's do this here.
It's pretty interesting, and it kind of fits in real well because it's got some wild, wild rumors going on.
There's some crazy fucking theories about this town. So, like in the case of Centralia, the mistakes of the previous generation may haunt some of these towns. Others might be literal portals to the underworld. Boston, Ohio, affectionately nicknamed Helltown, might just fit that description. It sat abandoned, as if one single event had cleared out an entire population in an afternoon. Could it have been the evil crybaby bridge, a haunted school bus, a mutant python, or even a secret satanic cult that brought the town to ruin?
Quite the gambit there. Of
yeah, you've got, you can pick options. A litter, you know?
Yeah.
The mutant python is my favorite one.
Yeah, that's wild. Which we'll explain.
Yes,
sure,
yes.
You're like,
yes.
What the
hell?
What
are you guys fucking talking about? However, long before the tales of serial killers and Satanists, Boston boasted its status as the oldest village in Summit County and one of the oldest in the state of Ohio. Founded all the way back in 1806, it started with one log cabin built on the future site of Boston Cemetery. Then one day in 1974, everyone in this once vibrant community vanished. It was up to those who explored afterwards to put the pieces together of what really happened. A Presbyterian church in town was revealed to be adorned with upside-down crosses all over the place, sparking rumors that this classic American town worshipped the devil.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, I do think if you come to this ghost town just as an urban explorer and you don't know anything, and you go into this church and you see it's covered in upside-down crosses,
I know what I'm thinking. I'm thinking there's some devil worshippers up in here.
I'm definitely considering this.
Desecrating this holy site.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to conjure the devil.
It's easier to conjure the devil than conjure an angel. I almost said an alien.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, whoops. There's ways to do that too.
Yeah, we can figure it out. And on the bridge, one could hear the cries of babies thrown into the frigid waters below. If you left your car there, it would be covered in dust and footprints of small children.
Whenever I hear of a haunted site that is associated with throwing babies into it, I am just like, what is going on there? What kind of evil is going on?
This is the portal to hell. This is the portal to hell. I just watched this like pretty crappy Japanese like made-for-TV horror short film, and it was very crappy, but In a similar way, they're like driving on the highway and they stop at this noodle spot that's haunted by this family that went over into a lake. But that's how they can tell that they're this family who comes in the noodle shop, you know, they're ghosts. So when they go back out, they look at this family's car and it's covered in the footprints of their children.
That it always gets you.
It always gets me. It always gets me. A child's footprint on my car. I'm good. Even more evil than this crybaby bridge, there's the abandoned, rusted school bus that holds the ghosts of school children, and even the serial killer who had killed them all there, one by one.
So basically, we're talking about a place that is hell on earth.
Yeah. Everything you can imagine took place here.
Yeah. Every evil.
Yeah. Under the sun.
Yeah.
And cryptid hunters have even descended onto the town, believing that a chemical spill caused the evacuation. It turned a random garden snake into a giant mutant that terrorized the entire town. And the government covered up the disaster by shutting it down. And that's one of my favorites because it's like, damn, we accidentally created like a Godzilla-style Hydra.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. That's fucked up.
I think I'm more scared of that than the serial killer or the Satanist.
Yeah, because the other ones are just kind of like ghosts and, ooh, spooky. But a gigantic snake.
Who drank a bunch of Roundup.
Yep. Classico. Yeah. Yep.
It was grew like a weed.
Dude, I wonder actually, you know, if there's one snake who could survive.
Yeah, that would just like genetically mutate
and
not die instantly.
Yeah. Did you ever have those like fake snakes that you put in water and they started really small and then in water?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm imagining here.
Just absorbs it.
Super powerful, crushes the town.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's like that one fucking SpongeBob episode with the giant worm.
Oh, why? Move Bikini Bottom over there.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot what it's called, but if you know, you know.
That's a good episode, man. It was even claimed, though, that back in Boston, not Bikini Bottom, in 2016, a teenager who went exploring in Boston was eaten by a Wendigo.
Now we got Wendigos?
Yeah, we got everything here. No aliens, though, which is surprising.
Yeah, interesting that the aliens didn't pop in here.
I know. You'd think with all the other crap going on.
I think maybe
no, because they've seen this shit, and they're like, we're not interested.
I don't care about that. I don't care about that. Authorities took steps to cover up the truth and blamed a bear for this teen's untimely demise. It's also been claimed that two children from the town went missing at the hands of this satanic cult, and a cult shootout led to the deaths of 14 people holed up inside a compound within this small village. Now, this all sounds very crazy. Many of these more insane claims, the Wendigo, the missing children, the cult shootout, all originate from a fictional mockumentary on the town that many have incorrectly believed was a work of journalism.
Which I feel like this happens more often than not.
Yeah.
People mistake mockumentaries as actual documentaries.
And, you know, actually, I don't want to.
Which that means it's a good.
That means that you did a good job.
Pretty good mockumentary, yeah, then.
I don't want to give these people the benefit of the doubt because it does say up front in the documentary. Mockumentary. This is a work of fiction.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, guys. How did you miss that?
Yeah. But it somehow makes its way over to the Wikipedia page.
Right.
And all of these other outlets. So
people are like, holy fucking shit.
Maybe this shit really happened.
Right. Right. In reality, this town's abandonment mirrors that of Centralia and many other American ghost towns. In 1974, the public had grown concerned about the disappearing forest land across the country. Perhaps in an overcorrection, President Gerald Ford signed a bill that gave the National Park Service jurisdiction to expropriate land for the establishment of national parks. Using eminent domain laws, the NPS bought the properties of the town's residents to build the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. The only problem was that the residents of Boston had no idea that their land had been sold out from under them.
That was sneaky.
Yeah. And, you know, this is fucked up. There's also like a terrible practice in New York called the Housing Preservation Department that in a similar thing, it was like it was to battle homelessness in New York. And in this overcorrection, they gave the city the ability to, you know, scan property, you know, bills and everything. And, you know, oh, an unpaid water bill on this property from 20 years ago. That means that this house is probably empty. So eminent domain laws, buy it out. Give it away. Now, of course, they just use it to be like, oh, you didn't pay your water bill in 1990. Well, the city now owns your house and we're going to tear it down and build a housing property.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it seems like we do this thing kind of a lot.
Good old government.
Good old government.
Yep.
Good old government. Before the town of Boston made their mass exodus, citizens left messages in their homes. One wall states, now we know how the Indians felt. And many left behind no trespassing signs to voice their discontent.
And after they went through all the trouble of kicking out this entire community, the government took its time establishing a real park in the area. As the town was abandoned overnight, these strange tales came to overshadow the real tragedy of what had happened. For one, the Presbyterian Church was one of the few American churches built in the Gothic Revival style, featuring many upside-down crosses to venerate humility and martyrdom. In Catholic tradition, the upside-down cross symbolizes St. Peter, who was crucified upside down. So when you know that detail, you're like, okay.
It's a little different. I also think, you know, for one, Satanists awesomely took the upside-down cross and made it their own. But, you know, I think it's the overcorrection as well on the part of evangelicals to be like, oh, if that's there, that means this is a place of evil, you know, as opposed to just a different sort of artistic motif.
Yeah. Yeah, St. Peter was crucified upside down.
Uh-huh.
Do we forget about that? Apparently we did. The Crybaby Bridge mirrors dozens of spooky bridges across the country, all with the same story. And the Boston's Bridge doesn't have any confirmed stories of any infants actually being thrown off, thank God. And that bizarre school bus, obviously a very strange sight for anyone entering this abandoned village. But in truth, a family had moved into the bus while their house was undergoing renovations and been living in it when the government issued an order to vacate the town.
Which that's got to be very unfortunate timing.
Yeah.
You got all these damn renovations going on. You're living in a bus. All right. Now you have to leave.
Yeah. Actually, this is ours.
Sorry. Yeah. And the bus. Leave that.
Yeah, exactly. The fact the bus remained behind. But there is some truth to the chemical spill. You know, we've had a lot of those. Forest rangers discovered toxic chemicals in the Krejci dump in 1985, so much so that they fell ill and developed mild rashes, but neither mutated nor a gigantic Godzilla-type python has ever been found or has terrorized the town, as legend reports.
But that's why we'd like to say we're going to go down there.
But we will find it.
We will find
it. In a giant hole.
Yeah. Have they checked the holes?
Yeah. Who knows?
Who knows?
With Mother's Day right around the corner, get your mom a gift that she will love for years to come. Stop buying her the lotion. Stop buying her the bubble bath. Get her something she'll actually love and thank you every time you see her.
She will. She absolutely will.
Because she's going to love keeping up with your life, keeping up with your kids, keeping up with your pets, your friends, all the adventures that you go on thanks to her Aura Frame that you're about to get her. Aura Frames are the coolest gift, and I promise you, your mom will love it. I can tell you from personal experience, my mom absolutely loves her Aura Frame. Literally every time I get together with her, she's always like, oh, I love that picture of Holly on the frame. I mean, it's just a gift that keeps on giving. It's great for grandparents as well. Maybe you got a grandmother you want to spoil. Get her an Aura Frame. You can set it all up beforehand, preload it with all the pictures and videos, which is nice.
That's especially if you're getting it for grandma, because, you know, with my grandma, we tried to help her set up Wi-Fi once. That was tough. That was tough.
Helping grandma understand what Wi-Fi is a tough conversation.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So you want to get them something that they can just plug in, good to go. Mm-hmm. You can preload it, pre-configure it, so that's all they have to do, and then they get to sit back in that rocking chair and just watch the pictures scroll through, and they love it.
And what's really cool is it's unlimited amount of photos, which a lot of these other digital frames, there's a specific, you know, amount that you can put on there before you start to have to like take them off or whatever. There is no limit on Aura, which is so good.
Which is great for videos.
Yes.
So you can have loads of like those great, you know, those funny, you know, memories and clips that you have on your phone. You can load those on there and they just play automatically as it scrolls through. And then you can customize the crap out of it. I mean, you can have all sorts of different playlists. You can resize things, crop things. I mean, you can spend hours on it. Kendall spent hours. She's like an Aura expert at this point. I mean, I think we have like 10 Aura frames between the office and her house. And that's like a part-time job for her at this point. Well, and she loves it though. It's not a headache.
I got to say in the past when I've had an Aura frame within my use, I like to put very funny photos on it to prank the people I live with.
There you go.
That's one of my favorite things to do. And then they're like, oh, this was goofy.
They text you, they're like, Ian, did you put that on there?
Is a picture of me like this?
Yeah. What's great is that the app is amazing. It's smooth. It's easy to upload. It talks right to your photo library on your phone. And you can even text message photos to your frame. So it couldn't be easier. It's named number one by Wirecutter, and you can save on gifts moms love by visiting AuraFrames.com. For a limited time, listeners can get $25 off their best-selling Carver mat frame, which is a beautiful frame, with code MILEHIGHER. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code MILEHIGHER. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout, please. Terms and conditions apply. Ian, are you feeling sluggish?
Yeah.
Are you bloated?
Yeah. Yeah, keep them coming.
Not feeling like yourself?
Oh, boy.
Well, Ian, there's something here to help you with all three of those problems. Because, you know, Ian, I know you love to eat.
I love to eat.
And I love to eat, too, clearly. And I think both of us, as much as we try not to eat processed foods.
Oh, it's unavoidable.
We eat a lot of processed foods.
Many, many.
I mean, today was Wednesday.
Today was Wednesday. That's why I'm bloated and not feeling like myself.
Well, then maybe you should try some Armra.
Mm.
Armra is here to help save the day, get your body back in shape, get your immune health to new heights. Because let's be honest, today's environment is filled with toxins everywhere. There's processed foods everywhere, modern stressors, immune disruptors. So nourish your microbiome and strengthen your barriers to support your immune health with Armra. And you might be like, well, what is Armra? Armra is colostrum. And this is like the new fad now is colostrum.
We were talking about it last week because we were like, what exactly is it?
Ian, colostrum is liquid gold, and technically it's bovine colostrum. And this is really, really good for you. And Armra has figured out a way to harness it so that it doesn't taste disgusting. It's not unappetizing. Because I think all of our first thoughts are like, colostrum? Like,
it connotes a bit of colon.
That's an interesting way to think about it. It just reminds me of mothers providing for their babies. Because that's where I've most recently experienced it. And you know what? It is liquid gold. And now you can get it for your adult self. You know, you can take advantage of all the benefits. Because Armra is not just a supplement, ingredient, or superfood. They're a bioactive whole food. And Armra's founded by a physician. So you know you got the brightest brains working on this. It's not processed. It's pure, potent, natural, and clean. It's not beef colostrum. It's bovine colostrum. So you're getting the top quality you can possibly get. They're ethically sourced. They are very committed to sustainably sourcing with a commitment to calf-first sourcing. It's just 4 scoops a day, and it keeps the doctor away because you're going to feel so much healthier. Your skin's going to be healthier. Your hair is going to be healthier. Metabolism, but it's going to help you de-bloat. It's really just going to get your gut in check into a good place. Don't knock it until you try it. Armra's colostrum is packed with over 400 bioactive nutrients that fortify your gut health. Fuel fitness, recover, and strengthen your immune health. And now you can get a special offer today because we worked out one. A special offer for our audience. Receive 30% off your first subscription order. Just go to armra.com/milehigher or enter milehigher to get 30% off your first subscription order. That's armra.com/milehigher. There have been some strange things. There was a very strange creature that washed up on the shores of Montauk that made the news. Janelle, if you pull it up, we talked about this years ago when it happened, but a lot of people, you know, obviously there's the conspiracies around Montauk and, you know, what went on there, because it used to be a base that maybe there was some genetic testing and, you know, they created some mutant animals there, because this thing is really bizarre looking and I don't believe they ever figured out exactly what this thing is.
Oh, I remember this.
I think they said it was some type of...
Oh, yeah.
But it's like a hairless... I don't even know what to describe it. Like almost a cat-like seal-looking thing.
It was decided eventually that it was a raccoon.
What?
It says, decided by experts to be that of a water-degraded raccoon.
I don't know. I guess if
you blow this picture up so Ian can see it.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't, I wouldn't say raccoon at first, but I guess I've never seen one degraded by water.
I've never seen a raccoon that has a face like
what's
that.
What's going on with the beak?
Yeah, there is a beak.
It's also flipping us off.
Yeah.
He's like, fuck you guys.
But I mean, that's a prime example of something very weird that washed up in an area where very strange things had gone on for many years. So, who knows? Maybe this python actually exists. Like, maybe it's the only truth to this story.
Here you go.
Oh, okay. Yeah, with that.
Yeah, but there's a freaking raccoon doesn't have a beak. That thing clearly
has
a like,
skull with missing teeth. How it's his nose.
Oh.
Okay.
I don't know about that.
I swear to God, I hit a jackalope once. I swear to God, I did. Because this was either a jackalope or the world's biggest rabbit.
And there's some big rabbits out there.
There are some big. I smacked the fuck out of it with a car.
You saw some antlers?
I don't know. No, I didn't. It's just a really big rabbit. And I was like, how could a rabbit be that big? But I did hit it at 85 miles an hour, so I don't really know how.
Oh, damn.
It was
so
3
it got reduced to.
It was splat.
Next to nothing.
It was disintegrated under my brother's car.
Damn. Well, in 2016, Helltown was officially demolished and incorporated into the larger national park. Its memory isn't forgotten, though, as nearby Peninsula, Ohio has an annual Python Day in memory of the legendary cryptid.
We should go to that.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
That and Mothman Day.
Oh my God, I'd love to go to Mothman Day.
That looks awesome. The Boston Cemetery, the original site of the town's first cabin, remains untouched and is still the subject of many ghost stories and strange apparitions. However, while Boston may be gone off the map for now, at least it actually existed at one point in time. Because these next few towns have no records, no maps, only the word of those who swear they once lived there. You know, they had that relative. Uncle Johnny said he lived in
Urkhammer.
In Urkhammer, Iowa.
Yeah, I was at the gas station there.
Yeah, I drank a few six packs up there.
My buddy Tim. Buddy Tim in Urkhammer.
You know, they have that faint memory of passing through, perhaps on a late night drive, on a road trip. Or maybe these were actual towns that just simply vanished and have been covered up for one reason or another. Which leads us to Ashley, Kansas. On a seemingly normal night in August 1952, while the rest of the country was sleeping, Ashley, Kansas ceased to exist. At 3:28 a.m. on August 17th, a 7.9 magnitude earthquake was measured by the U.S. Geological Survey. While the massive quake was felt across the Midwest, its epicenter was directly beneath the small, quaint community. When law enforcement arrived on the scene, they found a smoldering, burning crack in the earth measuring 1,000 yards in length and 500 yards in width. That's a pretty big crack.
That's a big hole.
That is big. We have no idea how deep it was. But on the night of August 29th, authorities announced that the search for the 675 residents of Ashley was called off. They had seemingly just been sucked into this pit, never to be seen again.
That's a horrible... I mean, we were talking about sinkholes.
Yeah, that's about as bad as it gets. Then on August 30th, another earthquake struck the Midwest. It was only a 7.5 magnitude earthquake, and its epicenter was once again beneath the now disappeared town of Ashley. And when authorities arrived on the scene once again, the massive hole in the earth had closed.
Sealed up. Healed itself.
Yeah. Wow. As authorities attempted to piece together what had happened, they found a deluge of paranormal reports from residents in the days leading up to this massive earthquake, including visions of UFOs, young girls speaking to the spirits of their deceased fathers, very specific, and even a blood-red sky that reportedly lit some of the residents on fire. Jeez.
Rapture.
Yeah. We missed it.
Fuck.
In a final phone call with the police just hours before the quake, a young girl can be heard screaming for her mother as loud footsteps enter the room. According to legend, the government covered up any trace of Ashley and its 675 residents. They just never existed in the eyes of the federal government. Evil. And spooky. A cataclysmic event that saw the extinction of an entire community in an instant. You'd assume that people would be talking about the disappearance of this lovely town of Ashley across the country. Well, unfortunately, it never existed. Likely. As part of a 2012 trend, numerous stories of towns that simply vanished in the middle of the night appeared on the good old subreddit No Sleep.
Great.
It would be on No Sleep.
That's one of my middle school haunts, No Sleep.
Oh, yeah. While some seemed to die off as soon as they were posted, Ashley's story managed to stick around and became, you know, sort of this modern folktale. It also included details like the supposed transcript of the final call to police, which made it stick out as a story with maybe some credibility.
Right.
You know, hey, we got a 911 call.
There's got to be something here, right?
Could not possibly be made up. But a simple search of the U.S. Geological Survey archive shows that there was only one earthquake in Kansas in 1952, and it occurred much earlier in the year. On top of that, a 7.5 magnitude earthquake anywhere in the Midwest would be less of a folktale, more of a national tragedy, and an absolute freak of nature. I mean, it's kind of a big old earthquake, man.
Yeah, that's a huge deal. That's a huge deal. And in a place where, yeah, you get tornadoes and crap, but...
And earthquakes, but not on that scale.
Not on that scale.
The largest earthquakes in the Midwest recorded history occurred in 1811 and ranged from the 7 to 8.0 on the Richter scale. However, one of the more believable of these disappearing towns is the story of Urkhammer, Iowa, a supposedly bustling suburb in the 1920s. And at its height, it included residential homes, an Esso gas station, a general store, a sheriff's office, a school, and its own local newspaper. However, those who drove through this town described its local residents as oddly silent. Then in 1928, two strange events took place. While this supposedly was the town's peak, photos taken at the time revealed nothing but empty, rolling fields. Then a motorist who filled up his car at the local Esso found that he was on E only 2 miles later. Hey, what kind of gas is this?
What the hell? Are they watering this shit down?
What is this? When he attempted to return to the town on foot, he discovered that no matter how narrow the distance he had gone, you know, he's driving back furiously, the town always seemed to be farther and farther away. Sounds like a plot of a horror movie or something.
I know.
Yeah.
That's pretty sick, honestly.
Yeah, honestly, it's kind of cool. I mean, not if I was in that situation.
I'd be pissed the fuck off.
Yeah,
I would be so mad.
Like, wait, what's going on?
Like a mirage?
Yeah. And while both of these stories were published in an Iowa newspaper, they were printed the same day as Black Tuesday. And so the reports of the strange town simply fell into obscurity. Then in 1932, two men passing through Urkhammer attempted to purchase something at that general store, only to discover that they were unable to enter. Not because the store was closed, but because their feet simply fell through the front steps as if they weren't there. What is this, some kind of glitch in the Matrix? What are we doing
I know,
here?
This is a holographic city.
Yeah, what is this?
It reminds me of that SpongeBob episode with Plankton eating the holographic food.
Oh.
I got the same image in my head.
Maybe that's what was going on. You know, so they go over to the sheriff's department and be like, hey, sheriff, what's going on here? Never could get in. Hands just passed right through the door. Later that year, the town's disappearance was complete. A farmer passing through found what had been pictured all those years ago. Just nothing more than rolling fields. It's just completely gone.
Gone. Literally vanished.
Now, what's interesting about Urkhammer is that this urban legend seems to have originated from a single blog post, and the blog has since been closed to the public. The newspapers mentioned have never existed, and there's no record of the important photograph either. And while many of these tales of the vanishing town come from the internet age, there is one that predates everything. And it's perhaps the most believable, and Ian has a personal tie to it.
Yes, yes, both of my parents, I swear to God. That's crazy. It was funny. It was funny. I'll explain when we get to it. But so records relating to Doveland, Wisconsin should be easy to attain. Hundreds and like a ton of people remember visiting such a town located somewhere in the middle of the state, a genuine crossroads for reaching the major cities of Milwaukee, Chicago, and Detroit. However, none of that exists for Doveland. Only the recollections of family members who swear that someone they knew lived there. And while there's no fun ghost story for Doveland like there are for the other two, there are some interesting theories. For one, we have a massive earthquake that swallowed the town whole, though for the same reasons as Ashley, Kansas, this is highly unlikely. However, a unique one is that damming destroyed the town. Now, over 900 dams were built throughout Wisconsin, and many have been removed, destroyed, or abandoned. A number of these dams did burst, leading to the destruction of public and private property. So could Doveland have simply been washed away?
Yikes.
Yikes.
Somebody just busted the dam?
Sorry, guys.
Blew it up.
Well, and you know, there are tons of towns, especially in the South, you know, where we did kind of drown whole towns to make way for
right.
dams and
yeah.
everything, you know, that we did that a ton. So
it is possible.
Totally possible. Another rather intense theory is that extraterrestrials were
always
drawn,
blaming the aliens.
I know, dude. This is kind of what my mom said. We're drawn to the town because it was being built for a military project. Whatever the project that was being constructed in the town was of intense interest to the aliens, and they abducted everything.
We'll stop this right here and now.
We're taking the buildings too, brother.
Just zap it.
Uh-huh. I bet they could. They just are being nice for the most part. They don't usually take a city.
But also, like, why?
Yeah.
There's so much empty space in this country that they could easily just acquire.
That's true. That's true. But it's because we were doing...
They didn't like the project going on.
Whatever we were testing.
They said, hey, let our friend go.
We know you guys built the nuke. This is much worse. Whatever you're doing here is worse.
Yep.
Wouldn't they come get rid of Area 51 then?
It's heavily guarded.
Not for aliens.
And maybe perhaps it's not Area 51. It's not even our base.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
This is a new theory I'm cooking up right now.
There we go.
Ooh, okay, uh-huh. Tin Hat.
Co-managed.
Yeah. That.
Perhaps.
Perhaps.
Co-managed. Well, as you guys know, I'm a new dad. I've got two kiddos now. I've got a little cute baby. Love the infant stage. It's just so cute. He's growing like a tree, man. He's already gained, I think, 5 pounds. I was just holding him last night. I'm like, God, dude, he's hefty. He's a hefty boy. And you know what? Once he transitions out of our room, to his crib, I will not trust any other baby monitor out there other than the Nanit Pro. The Nanit Smart Baby Monitor has been such a just safeguard. It's provided security and it just works. We have used Nanit, I think, for the past, I mean, we still use Nanit actually in our daughter's room. She's in a big girl bed now, but we have a Nanit camera in there as well. And it's just gives us that peace of mind to be able to keep an eye on your kiddos. And it's always works. It's easy to set up. It's crystal clear video. The audio is really good. You can talk through it to your kid. I'll be like, I'm watching you.
Hey.
Get back in bed.
I see you wiggling out.
Yeah. Or like Holly, she'll get out of bed and like try to sneak around and play with her dollhouse and stuff. And I'm like, hey, get back in bed. What are you doing?
They're sleeping too.
Yeah. It's like, come on, man. It's bedtime. But the Nanit Pro is great because there's a bunch of different ways that you can use it. We've used it, you know, obviously the most common way to use it is the floor stand that goes behind the crib, and the monitor actually sits over the top. And what's great is with infants, they have these breathing bands. So you can put this kind of Velcro band around your baby, and the Nanit will actually like monitor heart rate, will monitor breathing. And it just, you know, especially once you transition from them being like within arm's length of you to another room, there's nothing that gives you more peace of mind than knowing that, you know, something's keeping an eye on your kid and making sure that they're breathing. Cause that's like a big point of anxiety, especially for new parents, is that you know, you're always worried about, you know, SIDS and other risks and things like that. And so you want to be able to keep an eye on your baby. And we have trusted Nanit for years now. We swear by it. We take it everywhere we go. And what's great is that any Airbnb we've ever gone to on a trip, we've always taken our Nanit with us because they have this like little travel stand. And then all you have to do is pop into the app, change to the Wi-Fi settings of the Airbnb, then boom, you have a baby monitor.
It's like a GoPro almost.
No, it is. It's amazing. So like we'll go and, you know, before we had our son, you know, we just put Holly down for a nap. And then we could go hang out and just pull up the Nanit app and be able to keep an eye on her. It's seriously the best baby monitor out there. With its crystal clear HD video, it'll also provide breathing motion monitoring, automatic sleep tracking, real-time safety alerts, and personalized sleep insights in one seamless system. Its overhead view gives you a view of everything clearly with Unreal HD quality. So it's seriously, like, take advantage of this offer. If you're expecting a child, I highly recommend it. Kendall highly recommends it. We swear by them, and we wouldn't trust any other baby monitor. The Nanit Smart Baby Monitor system, including the new 8-inch home display, which is really cool. We just got this, and this is nice because we've always used our phones. Before they came out with this, you just have to pop on your phone or like an iPad and then open the app, which is also really simple. But the home display is nice, so you can just have it like next to your bed. And then it's just like an actual little monitor there that you can have them on the screen. And you can also set up multiple Nanits on your account.
Oh, cool.
So we'll be able to have both of our kids on the same screen.
Split monitor.
Yeah, split screen for both kids to keep an eye on them. So right now, that new 8-inch home display is 20% off for Mother's Day. Yeah, Mother's Day is coming up. Use code MileHigher at checkout to get the 20% off plus a free travel case. Expecting listeners, add Nanit to your registry. And if you have friends who are expecting your new parents, just buy Nanit for them. They'll be so grateful you did. You can find Nanit basically everywhere at Nanit.com, Babylist, and Amazon. Add it to your registry. And if you have expecting friends, buy it off of their registry form. Because Mother's Day is right around the corner and moms want nothing more than peace of mind and some sleep. Those non-terrestrial officers are hanging out there.
Yep. Gary McKinnon might not have.
Too bad he didn't find anything about Dovlin and the
government computers. Unfortunately, I don't think anyone's going to find anything about Dovlin and these government computers. Now, while many of these theories do still stem from online speculation, one has been around since at least the 1980s. So, again, I asked my mom and my dad, who they both grew up just outside of Milwaukee, if she had heard of Dovlin. And she explained that once, when she was visiting a friend in college at Stevens Point, they said that Dovlin was once a nearby town known for military operations. When I asked my dad if he had heard of Dovlin, he refused to believe that it wasn't real in the first place.
When did your parents meet, though?
They met in high school together. So this would have been like 1973 or something.
So is it possible that they don't have like separate memories of it, that one of them had heard of it because they've been, you know, they've known each other for so long that
they just kind
of
put
it together.
I honestly think that's a good point, because my mom, when I texted her about it, she didn't believe that it was a fake town. You know, she kind of knew that it was this whole folktale thing. But it was funny when I asked my dad, he was like, oh yeah, it's just that fucking place. And then when I told him he wasn't real, he was like, you're wrong. It's real. And then I was like, no, look it up, man. He was like, it was like 20 minutes. He went quiet. He was just on his phone. So I think you're probably right. It's like my mom probably told my dad about this folktale.
It's just been like cemented in the memory.
In his head, like, oh yeah, that's a real place Suzanne told me about. But it was fun. He was so pissed. He was so pissed when he found out it was fake.
He's like, what else have I been told is a lie?
I know. He was like, God damn it.
He's like, you're wrong.
That's dead ass what he said.
That's so funny.
But on this whole military theory, after one of these projects went cataclysmically wrong, destroying the town, the government just simply covered it up and made it so the town never existed in the official record.
Why does it sound like the plot of It?
It is very It-like.
They discovered It.
That would have been so sick.
Yeah.
You know, again, I don't know.
Because it's a dairy town, right?
It is, yes.
Well, yeah.
Welcome to Derry.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if say the Manhattan Project in Los Alamos went, like they accidentally just blew up Los Alamos and the surrounding New Mexico area. Would we have known about this? Or
that's
would it
point.
Have just been, you
wiped
know.
Wiped clean from
right.
history. Yeah, I think that's a really valid point.
And you know, if you, there are contemporary primary sources about the atomic tests, like especially the blasts. And obviously there were tons of people who lived nearby or who were driving. They weren't told what happened. To them, it was like this, like, what the fuck?
What's going on out in the desert right now?
That's the biggest explosion in human history.
Yeah, that's really true.
So I don't know. Now, there's another theory. I personally like this one, that Doveland was indeed on a map, only it was a fake town added to early maps to catch other cartographers who were copying work. If someone added the fake town of Doveland, they knew the map was a forgery.
Oh, shit.
I love that.
I love that.
Gotcha.
That's a fantastic, fantastic theory.
Yeah, your map's inaccurate.
Yep. Oh, Doveland there? Gotcha, yeah. Bitch.
Here's a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Cease and desist.
Yep.
Stop making maps.
But urban legends surrounding Doveland are still strong. To this day, a mysterious man posts pictures of a rundown Midwestern town claiming they're from Doveland, while also trolling one guy in the comments who he refuses to speak to. It's so sick. It's just this one guy. The Facebook page is just called Doveland, Wisconsin, and he just posts pictures from the Midwest, and it's another guy commenting on all of them being like, this is of so-and-so-and-so. Why do you claim to be Doveland? Doesn't respond ever.
Yeah, so it lives on. It lives on in some people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, it's important to note that spooky tales and bizarre mysteries are not the only kind of vanishing place we have in this country. Some of the ghost towns surrounding us reflect a different, more hopeful moment for the people who live there and the reality that crushed it. For instance, right here in Colorado is the ghost town of Deerfield, just 30 miles west of good old Greeley, Colorado, which Janelle and I know very well.
Mm-hmm.
It was founded in 1910 by Oliver Toussaint Jackson, a successful black businessman from Boulder. Oliver had been inspired by Booker T. Washington to create a self-sufficient community for black Coloradoans on the frontier. And after Oliver advertised the community in the newspaper, people came flocking to it. The word Deer was chosen for its name due to how precious the land had been to the town's settlers. And after a few harsh growing seasons, the town was flourishing, and by 1920, it had between 200 and 300 residents, along with two churches, a school, and of course, a restaurant. The farming community was completely self-sufficient, and by 1921, the town's net worth was a whopping $1,075,000. It was about 19 mil today.
That's pretty serious.
Yeah, that's a good economy going on there. However, during the Great Depression, the town's success went downhill fast. The majority of settlers left to find other opportunities, and when Oliver died in 1948, unfortunately, his town died with him. Since 1998, the Black American West Museum, which is based in Denver, has been working to preserve Deerfield for historical purposes, and it is listed in the National Register of Historic Places. So it's important to keep it in mind when driving through ghost towns dotting our landscape that while they may appear haunted now, they once represented the hopes and dreams of those who came before us which is such a nice way to wrap up this episode.
I know. I tried to put how a ribbon
endearing.
On it.
Yeah. Yeah. How endearing. I like that, though. I like that. It's a good thing to keep in mind, because you got to remember, like, why it even exists in the first place.
Right. People were coming here in the hopes of something, you know?
No, it wasn't to set up a haunt.
Right. They weren't trying to scare us or bring Satanists to the area.
No, they're just trying to make a better life for themselves.
Right, right.
And build a community. And unfortunately, due to, you know, sometimes factors unknown, things happen.
Right.
And, you know, now they stand as a reminder of, like, people really pushed the boundaries back then and put it all on the line, and
it just didn't work out.
No, didn't hold anything back. I mean, I love a good mystery.
I love a good mystery. You know, I just finished reading Satan Tango, which I brought up on Lights Out like 2 weeks ago, because I love this book. It was fantastic. But the ending of it kind of reflects what we're talking about here, because it's like, it is this town that everyone moved to at one point thinking like, oh, this is where we're finally going to be able to provide for our families and rich. But of course, the book picks up towards the end where everyone is just kind of, I mean, he writes about them as if they're pathetic, and the town has fallen apart, and they're completely, the government doesn't give a fuck about them. And they have to follow basically a con man who pretends to be a prophet. And he's like, no, destroy all your homes, leave it all behind. And that's the image of the town at the very end, is the old man who's just rewriting the story. And without that old man, you know, this town, you would never know. It would just be like we're coming across any of these other ghost towns, just these destroyed, dilapidated homes, and we'd fill in the stories ourselves.
So respect.
Respect.
Respect these places. You know, I know people go there and like vandalize them. I'm like, what are we doing?
No, man, this would just be someone's house.
Yeah. Like, let's protect the places, the history, and the people who once lived there. But let us know which place we talked about today interests you the most. What do you think happened in Roanoke? What do you think's really going on in Helltown?
I know.
Let us know your thoughts. Thank you for being here with us for another episode of Mile Higher. We appreciate you. We love you. We'll see you next time. Till then, keep on taking your mind a mile higher.
This is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. You know that moment when you're in your stylist chair and you're describing your dream hair like it's a Pinterest board come to life, but you have zero idea how to make it happen at home? That is my Roman Empire. But Amiga totally gets it. Their clean, vegan, cruelty-free, clinically proven formulas are why stylists swear by them. I'm obsessed with the Wizard Detangling Primer. It's like a magic spell for my hair. For a limited time, save 15% off your order with code FAMOUS15 on loveamika.com. Restrictions may apply.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
I like things my way. My coffee, my schedule, and my treatment. So I talked to my doctor about self-injecting with the VivGuard Hytrulo prefilled syringe, which contains efgartigimod alpha and hyaluronidase QVFC. It's injected under your skin, subcutaneously. It means I can inject in my space, on my time. It's my treatment, my way. Visit VivGuardMyWay.com. That's VYVGARD MyWay.com. And talk to your doctor about VivGuard Hytrulo, brought to you by Argenix.